Now, we're going to change topics yet again, as we always do every hour between now and 3 o'clock. We've got our B-man now. When I say he's a B-man, he's not a... he's a B-man. It's my pleasure to introduce Greg, our B-man. First of all, welcome, Greg.
Great. Thanks for having me along, Alan.
Absolutely great to have you along. Now, we should explain to people you are a man that's involved with bees, and that's what we want to talk to you about. It doesn't have some other connotation. Greg, when at one stage I was talking to you a while ago, and the little critters, the little bees, weren't as active as what they should be. In the last, first of all, we'll talk about 12 months. In the last 12 months, have they produced more or less honey than what you would normally expect?
Depends on where you are. Here in the Yarra Valley, yeah, it's been a bit of a lean season.
Has it? Why would that be, Greg?
Okay, there's two factors. One, drought. That's the main one.
Is it?
Yep. A lot of things flowered, particularly, I can speak from where I am, particularly. Gum trees flowered, but because we're in drought, although they flowered, there's very little or no nectar. So the bees were having a hard time bringing in enough nectar to convert into honey.
So the bees would still go out looking.
Oh, yes. Yep.
But they just couldn't get any amount.
Well, they could get some. Now, bear in mind, I'm a very conservative beekeeper. I didn't get into beekeeping for the honey. That was going to be a secondary byproduct. Yep. So that wasn't my focus, for which I'm grateful, because, as I said, with the drought that's been going on for so long, things were so dry, everything was flowering, but there was pollen, but very little nectar. So bees got enough to get by. Once again, depending on where you were, you may have done a little bit better than others. Some people did have some harvest. Me personally, zero this year.
Zero?
Yep.
All right. Now, you said some people get into it for the honey. Mm-hmm. You didn't. So why did you get into bees?
Well, I think I may have raved on about this in the past, Alan.
Yeah. But we've got new listeners too.
Oh, good. Okay. Here comes the story. It goes like this. Short version is, interested in growing our own food at home. We're an acreage.
Yep.
And I was finding that our produce wasn't what I would have normally expected. So I said to my dearly beloved, the domestic goddess, how about we get some bees?
And she probably went, oh, no.
No, I got, that very quiet, slow stare and the crossing of the arms and the slight tapping of the foot. That was the response initially. Right. However, yes, we ended up getting some bees. And the first season that we had bees and growing our own produce, terrific, really good results in terms of pollination. That's why I got bees.
So, all right. So when you said that you had the best probably season, why did the bees make it better? Because you had them on site, I struggle a bit to work out why they made it better.
Yep, well, you've hit the nail on the head.
Yep.
Because we have bees on site, because where we were, slightly remote from townships, there was just the native bees. We might see the occasional honeybee come wandering past, but we were relying on the native pollinators. And it just wasn't getting the results that I was hoping for growing our own food. Yep. So one beehive, that's what we started with, and the result was transformative. It really was in that first season.
With the actual you were growing?
Yep. All right. I'll give you an example. Yeah. The year prior, we like to grow our own pumpkins, for example.
Right.
So I'd have one vine of Jarrahdale and one vine of butternut.
Yep.
Previous season, we'd get one or two of pumpkins on each.
Yep.
The season with the bees, we had a plethora, multitude. We had over 40 pumpkins.
Gee, that's a big difference.
Mm, yep.
And that was only because you had bees on site, you reckon?
That's right. That'd be it.
Gee, that's a big difference.
It was. I became known as the pumpkin crazy guy.
You'd be given away everywhere. Pumpkin soup and best pumpkin and all sorts of stuff.
Ask me for recipes. Yep.
All right, so on that first year, your production obviously increased and the quality of the production.
Mm-hmm.
Did it also increase for your neighbours because they're now moving out, or did it have no effect on the neighbours?
Yes, the neighbours got the positive effect as well. But bear in mind, because we're rural, that's where I am in Macclesfield. It's predominantly a horsey sort of area.
Yep.
So there's some people were growing their own food, but there's very little in the way of decorative gardens as a generalisation.
Yep.
But anyone within a kilometre or so certainly benefit from our bees.
All right, so how far, and I know it's a bit hard to tell because they haven't got GPS tracking, yeah. But how far would you expect one of the or some of the bees out of your hive to go every day?
That's a difficult question to answer because there's so many variables. Depending on which expert you talk to, it can be anything from 5 to 8 kilometres in any radius direction.
Right. So when they leave of a morning, do they come home every night or do they go so far out and then like almost stay at a motel? I mean, I know that's being silly, but you know what I mean? Do they always make sure they're home at night?
Good question. The answer is yes, they always return to the hive at night.
Do they?
Always.
Always in daylight hours or can they come back at night?
You'll see the last of the stragglers come home just at dusk. But once it's dark, they can't navigate because they use the sun to navigate. So they all know we've got to be home before nightfall. It's like back in the olden days when you're a kid playing out in the street, when the street lights came on, it was time to go home. So it's similar for the bees. We've got to be home before nightfall.
Oh, right. And they can't navigate?
Without the sun? Nope. Because that's how they navigate. Via the sun.
Gee. All right. We've got to take a quick break. We've got a pile of questions to ask Greg, so we'll be back with more. He's our resident beekeeper. He knows all about the bees. Oh, well, certainly from our point of view, he did. I just want to... I'm not being silly when I ask this question because you said that these bees need to get home at night because they navigate by the sun. So How do they go on a dark, cloudy day? Do they just not leave the hive, or do they still go out when there is no sun?
Yep, they will still go out.
So how do they navigate then?
I believe it's UV light, which will go through clouds. It may not be visible light to us, but bees see on the UV spectrum. Right. So they can navigate that way.
Yeah, it wasn't a silly question.
No.
You could almost think that was silly.
No, not at all.
All right. So how often do you check your hive?
Once again, I can give you an answer. It depends. That's why. Look, honestly, if you ask any beekeeper a question, you can get two or three or multiple answers. Technically,
I am trying to get somewhere. I have got a reason behind this question.
Right. It's generally considered between 2 to 3 weeks in the past. That's going to change in the upcoming future. But usually...
Why? Further out or come in?
It'll come in.
Well, why? Is there a reason behind that?
Yeah, it's a very nasty little reason.
Right.
Varroa mite.
Right.
The little parasite that's... now in Australia, it's in northern Victoria, and it will end up in the Yarra Valley at some indeterminate point at the future. It could be next year, it might not be till the year after.
So how do you get rid of it?
You can't get rid of it.
So then you have to destroy the hive? Or?
No. I mean, you can't get rid of all of the mites. There are treatment protocols to minimise the numbers, but that's a whole different hour or so we could talk about. So because the way the varroa mite breeds and the effect it can have on a hive, once varroa is detected within the Yarra Valley, we're probably looking at approximately a 2-week window for inspections.
All right. So now I was asking that question for a reason. Mm-hmm. You said that this year never got enough.
Mm-hmm.
So how often when you're expecting it, and what told you there's not enough? I mean, you're going to tell me it's experience, but but for the people like myself and the audience, we don't have that experience. So when you look at the hive, you think, can't take any of this.
Yeah.
And what tells you that?
Okay, well, it's basically just how much honey is in the hive that's capped. All right, so that it's ready for a beekeeper to extract it. It's got to be capped.
Yep.
Now... I don't want to get too technical, but really it's a matter of, as you said before, a bit of experience. But when you go into a hive to check on how they're doing, you also have a look at just how much food stores they've got. So you can equate it with your ordinary household. How much food have you got in the pantry?
Yep.
If you're getting low or it's just average sort of numbers, you're not going to make, you're not going to go for another month or so without doing a big shop to replenish your pantry.
Yep.
Well, if the bees are having a bit of a hard time and they've just got enough to get by but not enough to make a big spread, all right, but don't take any. Because if there's only a small quantity there, if you get bad weather for the next 3 weeks or so, which is quite possible, they'll be using a lot of the honey they've stored for survival. So if you take too much from them, they're really going to struggle to survive and thrive.
So on a good year... How many times would you clear the hive?
When you say clear the hive, do you mean as in extracting...
Extracting the honey,
Extracting honey. Once again, it depends on where you live.
Yep.
Where I am in the Yarra Valley, I wouldn't take any honey before January or February because of the flora where I am.
Yep.
There just wouldn't be enough resources. If you're in, say... like anywhere like Wolverton or Hillsville or Lilydale, where there's a lot of suburban gardens, I know people that are in Lilydale, they'll be harvesting their first lot of honey end of October into early November, depending on the season, of course.
All right. I've got to take a quick break. There's a sponsorship announcement popped up, and we will just play a quick song and then we're back to talk to Greg. Now, the reason why I'm playing this one is a Kiss song, which is getting back a little bit. It's Rock and Roll All Night. I just want to mention to you, I'll be here on Sunday between 12 and 3 with music, memories and more. And I'll be back on Sunday night between 6 and 8 with a Rock and Roll Hit Parade. Plenty of rock and roll music here on a Sunday. go. Rock and roll all night. Brings back great memories for me. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're talking to Greg, our B-man. Now, first of all, Greg, are there more beekeepers in what I'd call a metropolitan area than what there are in rural areas?
Absolutely, yes.
There is more in the metro areas.
Yep.
So how many hives would the average, and I know you're going to say, but the average beekeeper in Melbourne, would they only have one hive?
Usually it's between two and three, depending on where they are. But two is quite common.
Is it? In the rural areas, how many would a normal beekeeper have?
Okay, well, there's two types of beekeepers. Yep. There's what is known as your recreational beekeepers, of which I'm one.
Yeah.
I've got six or seven hives.
I was going to ask you that. You've got six or seven hives.
Yep.
Can I just stop you there for a minute? Mm-hmm. Those six or seven, are they all on your property or do you have them on someone other people's property?
No, all on my property. Right. As I indicated, we have acreage, so I've got the space for them.
Yep. Would you, because you've got six or seven, does that give you more honey or do you just get the same amount of honey spread over more bees? Because there's only so far these bees can travel. Mm-hmm. So are you likely to get what you get out of seven, would you get out of maybe two? Because it'll still be a bit more bees, but there are only so much honey to bring in?
Once again, my favourite response is it depends.
Yeah.
As a generalisation, from my experience, if you've got seven hives, you're going to get seven times what an ordinary hive would be expected to
be.
So
you would get, so it would increase it by seven.
Yes.
Rather than
as a generalisation. Yep. Yes.
How, like you've just said, you got six or seven.
Yep.
If you're in the city, well, you can't have six or seven because you're not going to have enough space to have them, are you?
Well, it's not so much the space, it's regulations. Generally, you're allowed to have two hives on an average suburban block.
Right. Now, I know you don't live down there, but you must talk to other beekeepers. If I was going to put in two in my property, do I have to tell my neighbours? Do I have to get a permit to do it? And do you find that there's much of a resistance from the neighbours saying, oh, no, I don't want bees living around my place?
Okay, good question. No, you don't need a permit from the council to keep bees. However, it is a legal requirement to register with the Victorian Agricultural Department.
Right.
Now, that's a zero cost to the beekeeper. It's just one of those things because here's an interesting fact for you. Bees are categorised as livestock under the livestock under the Livestock Act, I think it's 1994. Yeah. And here's I'll throw this away as a little tangent. With the upcoming almond pollination season up in the Sunraysia district, that involves the biggest transportation of livestock, in inverted commas, in Australia.
Bees. All right. So that's the next question I was going to ask you. So how often, like, do you ever transport, like, they're on your property, do you ever transport them anywhere for a season? And why are these all being transported up to the Sunraysia?
All right, all my bees stay on my property.
Right.
I'm not interested in fostering them on someone else's property because if I've got to inspect all my hives, if they were one place, logistically, it's so much easier. But if I've got to go to three or four different places to check on the hives, that then becomes a time issue, which I'm not particularly fond of taking on. And what was the second part of your question? Sorry. Well, oh, yes, and going up to almonds.
Yeah.
Almond pollination will be starting in a few weeks' time, and that's a 2 to 3 week event, depending on the weather in the Sunraysia district, because the way they grow almonds, it's monoculture. And we're not talking orchards, we're talking plantations in terms of square kilometres.
Yeah.
So there's no other forage for any other insect. So they are, unfortunately, in my opinion, a sterile environment from an insect point of view.
Yep.
So they've got to bring the insects in to do the pollination.
So who's the ones that supply the bees up there? Oh, pardon me, and how do they get there?
Okay. How they get them there, it'll be, in some cases, on semi-trailer loads or a B-double.
Yeah. A B-double of bees.
Yep. Yep. A couple of thousand hives. Yep. Where you go. The number of beehives that an individual beekeeper has that he sends up to Armand's can vary enormously. There are some chaps that might only have 20 hives, but they'll combine their resources with other neighbours who have beehives as well,
right.
And they'll do what they call a job lot. So they'll take them all up in one hit rather than half a dozen guys taking up a trailer load.
Yep.
It'll be a small tray truck.
So these aren't commercial operators that take them up. They're more like people like yourself who are interested in taking them?
No, predominantly it's commercial operators. That's the bulk of it, of the hive movement, because they come from all over. It's not just Victoria. They come from New South Wales, South Australia, and even some from the bottom part of Queensland.
I'm going to ask you a question, and you're going to think this is dumb as all thing. How do the bees know? Like, we'll say, how many hives do you think will go up to the Sunraysia?
I believe it'll be somewhere between 180,000 and 190,000 beehives.
190,000
yep.
beehives. How do you not get the bees muddled up? How do you not finish up bringing back half of your bees and half of somebody else's bees? Are they territorial?
To a degree, but the big thing with bees is that every beehive has a queen, and each queen has her own distinct pheromone or scent, and it's different from every other hive. And bees know which hive they belong to. Also, a beehive knows if a strange bee comes up to their door, up to the entrance, and it didn't smell like what it should smell like, entry refused. As a generalisation.
Would they kill that bee or would they just send it off?
They send it on its way. It'll be a polite warning, nick off.
Gee, so it's at well policed. There's somebody at the start of the hive
that'll
say buzz off.
Yep. They're called guard bees, and there'll be a whole series of them just inside the entrance. Sometimes they're just outside checking on who's arriving.
Yeah.
But if they want to come in, present yourself and feel a touch, because that's how they communicate, by touch. And if you don't smell right, you're not allowed in.
So pretty well assured that the bees you take up are the bees you're going to bring back.
Mm-hmm. As a generalisation, there will be some drift, but it's usually quite minimal.
All right, so if you get this drift and there's three or four in the hive and they happen to get in, will that hive kill them or will they accept them then as their own?
If they get into the hive, they will be accepted, because as they move through the hive, the pheromone on all the bees, that's the queen scent, will be transferred onto them. So they will then, within a very short period of time, smell like they should. So
they'll think then that they're the same sort of... Unbelievable.
They belong. Well, if the guards have let them in, they trust the guards. That's it. If you've been allowed in, you're on the in crowd.
Gee, unbelievable. All right, we've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
If you see your brother standing by the road with a heavy load from the seeds he sowed, and if you see your sister falling by the way, just stop and say, you're going the wrong way. You've got to try a little kindness. Yeah, show a little kindness. Shine your light for everyone to see. Of doubt, and the kindness that you show every day will help someone.
along their way. You've got to try a little kindness. Yeah, show a little kindness. Shine your light for everyone to see. And if you try a little kindness, then you overlook the blindness of the narrow-minded people on the narrow-minded street.
To Greg, our beekeeper. Greg, how many commercial operators roughly would there be in, say, Victoria with bees?
Gee, that's a good one. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. They would only number, I would imagine, in a couple of hundred, I would imagine, but I'm guessing.
So a commercial operator, they would have, I'm just trying to get a grasp on this, like they wouldn't have so many acres in the Yarra Valley or something and have 100 bees there, would they? Would they have them spread out all over places?
As a generalisation, they would be spread out.
Yep.
Because a couple of the commercial guys have got 1,500 plus hives.
Have they?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, it's an enormous operation. I've got nothing but admiration for them, for how they manage their bees.
So they wouldn't have that 1,500 hives on the one property,
no,
would they?
No.
Because... Now, I think you told me this once before, and I just want to repeat it to listeners if they have, that the honey differs from place to place, doesn't it? Like, depending on where the bees get it from?
Absolutely, yes.
Yep. So it can look different and taste different?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, different consistency, look totally different.
Unbelievable.
And different flavour.
No, that's what I meant, a different flavour altogether.
Yeah.
Just because of where they get it from.
Yep, that's right. And depending on what's flowering, where it is and what it is. For example, red gum honey.
Yep.
All right, red gum honey, the red gum trees flower at a particular time of the year.
Yep.
as a generalisation, along the Murray or near the Barmer Forest. So the commercial beekeepers will take, you know, a good number of their hives up to where the red gum is flowering, and at that time that is about the only thing that's flowering, so that when the bees bring in the nectar and convert it into honey, the beekeepers know that, well, this is red gum honey because that's all that's flowering in this district at the moment.
So the red gum, so we talk about these commercial operators.
Yep.
I asked you whether they're all in one spot or they've gone around in different places. You said different places. But they also move them from time to time.
Oh, yes, they have to, because they're relying on whatever is flowering at any given point of time. So, for example, a commercial guy couldn't bring his, say, 300 hives near where I am and leave them there indefinitely, because they would starve. Because where I am, we're totally reliant on predominantly just two types of gums that are flowering.
Yep.
And that's for very specific periods. As a generalisation, where I am, we're looking at end of November, approximately into December. There's 3 to 4 weeks of flowering. Then there's nothing else flowering of any significance until the messmate kicks in, which is February, March.
Right, so commercial operators not going to be able to survive on that, are they?
No, they wouldn't.
So they just move them around all the time.
Yeah, they follow the flowering flora, wherever it is. And this is where I've got, once again, nothing but admiration for these commercial guys that know by experience what's going to be flowering predominantly and where it is and when. So it's a real juggling act on their part. And once again, bearing in mind, it's all weather dependent.
Because would a commercial operator, would they go to somewhere else altogether? Like, would they take them interstate, or do they just move them around in Victoria?
I can't answer that because I, I know a few of the commercial guys, but I've never discussed in depth how they operate. As a generalisation, they're following whatever is flowering. Now, if it happens to be flowering over the border, well, the border becomes an irrelevancy, providing they comply with all the permit, you know, restrictions and movement requirements. Well, I'll give you an example. We've got almond pollination coming up in August. Once that finishes, and it's a fairly short window, 2 to 3 weeks, they've then got to move the bees out of there because there's no food. Once the flowering stopped, there is no food, and I'm talking, once again, square kilometres of plantations. So they've got to move them out of there. So then they go on to, as a generalisation, rapeseed. Canola. Canola's next. Now, if you've ever been in the western part of Victoria, you know, going into September, there's fields of yellow.
It's just everywhere, the yellow.
It's everywhere.
I used to go that way for work,
So that's canola. So they'll take the hives out, some of the hives out of the almonds, move them into canola. Now, that might be in Victoria, it could be in New South Wales, wherever, but the guys will start moving the hives in a particular pattern that they know will be successful for the well-being of the bees.
All right, so if we've got somebody listening today who thinks, I wouldn't mind getting into this beekeeping, just one in their backyard or anything, what sort of cost is involved in setting up a hive?
Okay, look, if you're starting from scratch, I say it'll be between $800 and $1,000
per hive.
And you're fully set up. That gives you all your protective equipment. It gives you a good hive. That's on the go. You're not starting from scratch. You've got a well-developed, functioning hive.
So where do you buy the hive from?
From commercial beekeepers that are, excuse me for a moment.
So they actually, apart from collecting honey with them, they also produce them for sale too, do they?
Some of the guys do, yes.
All right, I'm going to take one more quick break and we'll be back with more.
Color me your color, baby. Color me your car. Color me your color, darling. I know who you are. Some above your color.
Just a couple of quick reminders. First of all, I'll be back on Sunday between 12 and 3 with Music, Memories and More, and between 6 and 8 on Sunday night with a Rock and Roll Hit Parade. Next week, we'll have Community Connections. We go the 3 hours. Just trying to think who the first one is, but definitely our private investigator will be in to tell us what he's been up to. But I'm talking to Greg, our beekeeper. Greg, it's just about time to go. I'll get you to give the people some contact details, how to find out more about the beekeeping. But would the average person, if they're going to start off with a hive, would they just start with one hive?
Yes. Yep. I feel that's the best way to begin.
All right. How are they going to find out more about beekeeping, please, Greg?
All right. I always recommend you can go to the Agriculture Victoria website, look up bees, and that'll give you the information on what's required from the government's perspective for registering. Then if you want to get down to the nitty-gritty, come and join the local bee group, or at least pop in and say g'day and have a chat to some of the local beekeepers about their experience. And
where do they find out where they are?
All right, well, the Yarra Valley Bee Group meets on the last Sunday of the month at ECOS.
Is it just called the Yarra Valley Bee Group?
Yarra Valley Bee Group. If you Google it or Safari it or whatever your search engine is, Yarra Valley Bee Group, you'll find our website. There's all our information about our meetings, speakers and that sort of thing. So that's a starting point.
So when you have your guest speakers at these meetings, they're obviously all about bees because you don't have normal, like other speakers.
Generally not. No, it's all bee-related in some form.
At one of those meetings, how many beekeepers would you normally get along?
In winter, the number drops down.
Yep. Does everywhere.
As it does everywhere.
Yep.
Unfortunately, I missed the last meeting we had just a few days ago. But as a generalisation, we'll have, say, in winter, we'll have about between 25 to 30, that's all.
Fair, right?
But in summer, summertime, it can be anything to 40 to 45 local beekeepers.
And you talk about how to improve your hives and...
Oh, look, it covers all facets of beekeeping. Oh. And I think what's really good about Yarra Valley is we have beekeepers of all experience, from fairly new beginners, and I consider myself a beginner with a few years' experience, but I'm still a beginner, and there's people that have been doing it for years and years and years, but everybody is a beekeeper. So there's no sort of looking down your nose at someone that's only just starting. What I found at Yarra Valley is that we're most supportive for anyone that wants to start beekeeping or even just find out about it.
All right, Yarra Valley Bee Group.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I've got to go. Thank you for your time. Always look forward to talking about these little critters. They're amazing little animals. Or what did you say they were?
Little creatures.
Little creatures.
Yep.
All right. Thanks very much for your time. Look up the Yarra Valley Bee Group and find out a whole lot more. Thanks, Greg.
All right. I'll buzz off then.